mom's house.
Hi there. Please note that this podcast contains sensitive issues. There are themes surrounding death and grief, and it may not be suitable for everybody.
I started writing music about Kate as an adult because I started really missing her and grieving for the fact that she didn't know me as an adult. And a lot of the lyricism in that song gone. Like, I was never given the opportunity to have an intelligent discussion with her or just have a glass of wine and talk with her. So a lot of gone, and the concept of can I say sorry when you're gone is me just feeling sorry for the fact that I won't know her in the way that I wanted to know her, and that I'm really sorry that she didn't get that chance either. Hi, I'm Izzy, and this is When Someone Great Is Gone. When Someone Great Is Gone is a podcast about grief and creative expression, and how people, whether they're poets, artists, dancers, or otherwise, can turn something so emotionally complex and difficult as losing someone into something creative, productive, and quite often beautiful. I wanted to create this podcast because of my own experience with grief. I was actually born into a same-sex family with two lesbian mothers. From the outside, when my mum passed away, and when we'd moved to rural Gloucestershire, it looked like nothing has happened, and people didn't really recognise my grief in the same way that I did. I honestly think if I hadn't discovered music in a way of listening to it and playing it and kind of being obsessed with it, I wouldn't have coped with grief in the same way. I wanted to explore this by interviewing other creatives about their loss and their work. Somehow along the way, I've delved further into my own story than I'd ever anticipated. But part of that has also been really enjoyable in getting to know and work on this project with my co-producer, Bridie. She and I have spent hours on the telephone, on FaceTime, on Zoom, and especially with having to adapt to what's been going on in the current crisis.
I just don't know how we can't see what's happening to us right now. I don't know how we should approach this whole series in this context when, like, it's happening. It's just too much.
We definitely started this project in a completely different world to the one we're in right now. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, and to acknowledge that there is a collective grief that is definitely underway in this pandemic. I think it's brought people together in a way which we hadn't anticipated, and perhaps our discussions on grief are more pertinent than they've ever been before.
Something that I was thinking of was the text conversation we had about delaying interviews, like me texting you being like, I think it's gonna get worse, addressing coronavirus. It's like a 10-minute audio segment in the series talking about how it was producing mm-hmm. it at that time or something.
I think I want to mull on it.
Okay.
It is now almost 2 months since the people of this country began to put up with restrictions on their freedom.
But the last question is quite a kind of weird one, but also very pertinent right now.
Yeah, I think we're not going to have any idea of the scale of the grief.
But it's just...
collectively.
It's bringing up a lot of emotion.
For a very, very long time.
Two people come to the group
one of which had lost someone from COVID-19. That felt like a very, very strange moment.
My mood swings about so much at the moment, especially during this lockdown. I'm sure other people are feeling the exact same.
In the seventh week of the lockdown.
The first time in 6 weeks.
Week four of lockdown. Today, I didn't realise how much of my life was socialising. Like, I knew I was quite a social person, but...
The government has decided that the current measures must remain in place for at least the next 3 weeks.
I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
Hello. I am concerned that we might have to cancel the interviews because things are going to get shut down. I don't know. Do you think things are going to get shut down? People keep saying this weekend, but...
The office is so empty, my bus was empty. It just feels really post-apocalyptic.
And it was great catching up today. Let's definitely grab a pint in Central again soon. All right, lots of love.
We didn't conceive this project during the coronavirus pandemic, although of course we now can't talk about grief without addressing what's happening in the world. The coronavirus pandemic has unfortunately led to a collective loss of normalcy. We are collectively grieving for lives lost, jobs lost, connections lost, and the loss of our life before COVID-19. This collective grieving can be active, mourning the loss of someone directly from COVID-19, or passive, revisiting the complex feelings of previous grief triggered by the effects of COVID-19. We will, of course, address the gravitas of this later in the series. For now, let's start at the beginning when pubs were open and we could talk about grief in person.
Like, in a way, this whole series is your version of your interview for this podcast.
Yeah.
And so I think we could have people talking about who she was and how you remember her. It frames it quite nicely.
I don't know if I told you this, but... So I had this really amazing moment with my mum the other day.
Yeah.
When I was driving in the car to London. We never spend that much time in the car together. I immediately regressed and started playing on his Nintendo Switch and was like this. And she was like, are you going to give me attention during this car ride? And one thing that we bond over is Radiohead. So I put on OK Computer and she goes, you know what? It's so nice to have someone to listen to this with, because your mum Kate hated Radiohead, and it was so nice to hear something that I wouldn't have got on with her listening to, or like just something that would have made me be annoyed at her, I guess. So I think the more that you can humanise the dead, the better. And then I've started doing this thing where, like, for instance, last week I went to this Windrush Generation talk with my auntie, North London lesbian, and I asked her what she didn't like about Kate, and I just keep. Like, one of the things that I'm doing now is just trying to humanise her so that I don't feel so cripplingly anxious when I speak about her, and I can actually see her for someone that isn't canonised and someone that has these real, like, dislikes.
Yeah, like, was a real human. Mm. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it?
May 31st, 1997. Dear Isabel, I am so sorry that I have died while you were so young. So before I died, I wanted to write to you and Daniel to try to comfort you. You must feel terribly sad right now, but it will get better in time. I think by the time you are 5, you will not feel as very sad as you do now. You will have got used to having just one mum around. The good thing, Isabel, about your mum is that she is a wonderful mother, and she will take great care of you, and she loves you so much that you will get happy again. Also, Daniel loves you so much that he will look after you, and that will help a real lot. Isabel, darling, I loved you so much, and that love will always be there inside of you. You are such a wonderful girl. So happy, so clever, so funny, so adventurous, and you have so many grown-up friends and child friends. Even though you're only 3, I can see that you are going to grow up to be a fantastic woman, full of talent and loving life to the full. I'm so glad to have been part of your life, even just for a bit. Even though it was only a few years, they were such precious years. Why did it happen to me? Nobody knows the answer,
I have died from an illness called cancer, and the doctors don't really know why some people get it. It's nobody's fault, Isabel. Not mine, not yours, not Daniel's, not anybody's. It just happened. Nobody did anything to cause it. You are probably worried where I will have gone. Well, my body will become part of the earth, where I am buried in Highgate Cemetery. And it will help to keep alive all of the trees and plants near the grave. But my spirit will live on in the hearts and minds and memories of everybody who loved me, and especially you, Izzy. Like Mufasa, I will always watch over you. With all of my love, Katie.
You know, it felt like the worst imaginable thing in the world came in and just sat down in our living room and destroyed our family as it was, you know. And once that's happened to you, you can never unknow that, you know. Obviously, statistically, I can know that it was something very unusual and difficult that happened to us. But actually, you know, a lot of children do lose their parents or a sibling, and it is the single most difficult thing psychologically that can happen to a child.
That was my mum Sue talking about what it was like for us to lose Kate. I lost my mum when I was a kid, so I, as I said, grieve for what I didn't have and who I didn't know, rather than feel an immediate grievance of someone I've lost quite recently. That grief from when you lose someone really young is more of, it's not so tangible in a way. And somehow speaking to people who directly work with grief or are involved with people who are dying really normalizes those emotions for me and shows me that there's no prescriptive way to feel after someone's gone, even if it's 20 years ago, 10 years ago, or 5 years ago. My relationship to that grief will develop and change over time, as it has done for the last 26 years of my life.
Grief is a range of emotional experiences, social changes, and even physical symptoms that take place in the period of adaptation to a significant loss. Grief is completely normal. Not only is it normal, it's a very common, probably universal experience. Everyone goes through grief if they live long enough. As well as being normal and understandable, it is common. And the best estimates we have from the research is that at any one time in the UK, somewhere between 10 and 20% of people would say that they are grieving. My name's Dr. McCabe. I'm a medical doctor working in NHS mental health services in South London. Grief can happen after any kind of loss. We typically think of it in the context of bereavement, losing a loved one. But it can be losing anything that has real meaning and value to a person. That can be a sentimental object or item. It can be losing a house. It can be a change of job. There's lots of things that can cause the grief process. Nowadays, we see grief as a very unique and personal experience, and it can be very, very varied. It won't look the same from person to person. There are a whole range of different behaviours, feelings, and adaptive responses which all fit within the process of grieving and are normal.
When I write a song and when I express myself musically, I'm expressing myself for the sake of my own emotions. I'm not doing it to meet anybody else's needs when I'm singing about her. I'm honestly just expressing what I feel innately about her death and my grievance for her. And I think that's why creativity can be so poignant to people who have lost someone, because it's a way of expressing your emotions without directly having to talk about them or have someone confront you about them.
My name is Nadia, and I am a musician, an artist, and producer, and a part of the duo Nula. I like to blend genres between bits of R&B, electronic. Music came into it because that's something my mum has always instilled into all of us, and there's always been music playing at my house. So for ages, I learned piano, I learned all those things, but I never really cared. It was more about the internalization of music for me that I didn't realize was imprinting itself into me until I was like maybe 16 when I picked up the guitar, started writing music. And I felt, I don't know, till this day, I feel like that pain turned into something really magical, and actually it became, I don't know, I feel like it became a part of me, and I was like, actually, music is what I love, and I'm expressing myself in a way that feels so easy and so natural, and I can write how I feel without feeling bad about those words, and actually finding some kind of like hope in those words and a release, actually. Time is up, the answer to this new rising. Head up in the clouds, just got us moon chasing. My first ever encounter of loss was when I was 10, well, I think 9, going on 10, and it was my dad. And it's weird because when I think about it, sometimes it feels like it was like centuries ago or decades ago. He was very quiet, very calm, very, very much like a Ghanaian guy, like just doesn't say how he feels, just very quiet. I was always in trouble because I was just always answering back, which is prohibited. Yeah, he really did believe that God was going to heal him of whatever this illness was that was attacking his health. And actually, that was what ended up as the thing that killed him. And I think, unfortunately, especially in the Black male community, sometimes it's hard for men to say I'm ill or to say I feel shit or I feel upset, I don't feel good. Because he knew we loved music, one day he went to Argos in Catford. He bought this state-of-the-art stereo system. We still have it till this day. It was really expensive. Now I look back on it because it's really quite ahead of its time. And he played the music on it, and I just sit there next to the speaker, just like, wow, these are so, because it was really big, like woofer bass, kind of bassy speakers. And he was really interesting character. So I met my grandma in the time that I'd lost my dad, when I was about 9, 10. Went to Ghana for the first time. Went to Tema, which was really cool. And she's just lovely, small, built woman who spoke not much English. But to her excitement, I understood everything that she was saying to me, but she just didn't understand what I was saying to her. So she'd always be like, oh, yeah, amazing. She used to always try and teach me to speak Tree, because she was like, you've got a good accent, come on, I'm going to teach you how to speak a real Ashanti. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, all right, sis, cool. And she was really funny and really cute. But when she died, I really, for the first time, saw how grief affected my mum. And we went back to Ghana for her funeral, which was a very interesting and beautiful experience, but very different to what it's like over here, where they brought her to the house, etc. And my mum was very, very like I felt for my mum, because I felt that way as well. Like, she became a child again and I became a child again, and it was just really like, it was quite painful, but then also quite a beautiful experience. Now you're showing me a sad, I never thought I'd ever see. Turn the keys inside the car. My grandma really kind of showed me like a part of my culture that felt displaced as well, because growing up in London, when you're from Ghana or any place that isn't in London, it's not easy to always feel like you are another ethnicity. Sometimes you're like, oh yeah, I know I'm Black, or I know I'm Asian, whatever, but you don't know until you go back that you're like, oh wow, actually that person looks like me. Oh my god, that person's like, what? And you actually start to re-engage with what that other side of you that was almost not there before. So I feel like she was that one part of me that felt, made me feel whole and made me feel like proud of myself and who I was, and be like, actually my culture is really beautiful and I've got a lot to learn that I wasn't able to learn when I wasn't around her. So I do miss her a lot, because she really helped me. She helped to remind me of that part of myself. She helped to be like, you are from Ghana, you are Ashanti, and you are beautiful, and that's how it is. And I would never think that. Speeding through the motorway, what's the digits? Red and blue behind me, forget the limits. Reaching up behind the wheel, 60 minutes.
I guess the first thing to talk about, because we've spoken about who you've lost and what they were like, yeah, and how that loss kind of shaped you, mm-hmm, I guess it's just more to elaborate a bit on that, mm-hmm, and talk about what that loss looks like in terms of emotion, mm-hmm, and how that shaped what you're doing at the moment and how it's made you feel throughout your life, actually.
I feel like loss has been something that I had to normalise, mm-hmm, very early. I had to grow up really quickly. I couldn't feel sorry for myself. I didn't have time to feel sorry for myself. I didn't have time to let that define who I wanted to be and where I was trying to go.
Yeah.
I feel like in terms of like shaping the music, I think what it did was it helped me to look from the inside and be okay with looking from the inside. I feel like I had to learn to get in touch with my emotion, yeah, really quickly from very young, and think, okay, how am I gonna put this out into the world? Do I take it inside or do I reflect it? And I think when I held it inside, mm-hmm, bad things were happening.
You know, like internalization of feelings can sometimes make you feel, well, I think it actually does make you feel a lot worse.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
It's quite an issue. And actually, mm-hmm, when you're able to express it, it doesn't, mm-hmm, necessarily have to be with a friend, mm-hmm, or talking to someone, but that creative expression that you're talking about, mm, you're sharing that emotion.
100%.
And that emotion is grief, but I guess manifests in other ways as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think exactly what you said. And I think music has been the best one, because, yeah, it's like you can talk, it's like writings on the wall, because you can just like spit it out and then look at it back and be like, oh my God, that's how I feel. And it's within your space.
Yeah.
And then you make the decision to let people make of it what they want to make of it. And that's what I like about music, because music is also poetry as well.
Yeah.
So it's like saying something and putting a tune to it, and it feels so much different.
It's rhythm, it's poetry, it's a whole body of something, isn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
And actually what you're saying really resonates with me as well, because I adore music. I've played music myself, but never kind of pursued it professionally in a sense.
Mm.
But for me, it's that quiet moments when you're sad and you sit down at a piano,
mm-hmm,
like Sampha says when he's like...
Yeah, exactly. No one knows me like my mother.
Exactly.
Mother's, yeah, yeah.
And you can express yourself in a room to yourself as well. It's not just other,
yes,
people.
Exactly.
It's getting those emotions out in a way that isn't just having a conversation, but actually is a part of you.
That's right.
And you've been given this gift of this amazing voice.
Thank you.
And part of that is being able to show that to yourself,
mm,
through your emotion.
100%. I totally agree. And I feel, I won't lie to you, like even when I'm writing, sometimes I actually like to just like sprinkle a bit of that in there, just,
yeah,
to be like, yeah, because even like the passion, even when I'm singing, I feel like sometimes I go to that place.
Mm-hmm.
I go to that place where I'm like,
that
I had
feeling
nothing.
That feeling of grief, that feeling of not
like feeling a bit incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like letting out that sound. It's just like, it just brings everything together for me. I don't know why. Mm. I don't know what it is. I started writing when I was 16 for the first time, when I picked up a guitar. I think Prototype had just come out by Outkast, and I was just obsessed. I was like, this song is too much. I would listen to it day in, day out. I loved it so much. And I was like, right, I'm going to pick up my guitar. I don't know much about my guitar. I remember learning a few things when I was 10, but it wasn't that serious. So I just kind of played some stuff and it sounded like Prototype. And I was like, hmm. Then I wrote my first ever song called What Do I Say? And a lot of the lyrics in that song, when I think about it, when I was 16, I was writing some really deep stuff. That was the moment I realized, I was like, this is me. I really find this natural. This, mm-hmm, is free flowing. And it kind of didn't get very serious until I started writing music and kind of putting it out there. And then I caught the attention of Chase's Status, and they contacted me and they were like, love your voice, let's do a song. And we wrote this song called Count On Me, and it went number 5 in the charts. And I was like, oh, okay, this is weird. And from that day, the industry has been an absolute roller coaster. I don't even know, like, it's been crazy. I put out my first EP called The Black EP, which again, that came from when I was at uni, actually. I was trying to avoid my essays, actually. And I was like, I need to get out of this. I can't be bothered. And actually what I found I was doing was writing about the grief. Mm-hmm. So I wrote songs like a song called Summon the Strength, also Freeze. All these songs were just about my, like, how I felt. But I And that came out, and people were really, really positive towards me. And that's actually what started the journey. And then now I'm at a point where I did the whole major label route,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting. Oh my God. I'm so glad I've like come out of that. Like, honestly, like I thought, really? I nearly lost my soul. So literally I've been an independent artist for now about 4 or 5 years, and it's been amazing, because unfortunately, you know, when we talk about grief, when you're in an industry like that and you're going through these kind of feelings, you can easily become very distorted, your yeah. emotions, because someone's saying, write this song, write about it. Why don't you write about that fact that you lost your dad at 10, or make a big hit, because everyone's wanting, you know, that so capitalism.
Commercializing.
That's right. Yeah.
They're literally making a profit from your emotions,
of course. And wow. I lost it. That actually made me, it's weird, it almost stopped me writing. I actually hated music for a year, and I didn't listen to music.
God, that's really interesting that it sparked that in you.
Yes, it did. Wow. And actually, till this day, I have to tread carefully not to yeah. let myself get into that space. So I stopped listening to music. Actually, people always say, where did you go? And I was like, I went off social media. So I didn't listen to music, didn't write music, and I was just depressed. And then all those feelings that I was feeling about grief and things that were going on in my life, they started to come flooding back.
Mm.
And then I had to, luckily my partner Luke, he was amazing. Like, he was just like, let's write some music, just write some music. And I was like, I can't. He was like, you can, try, come on. And I was just like, I can't. And luckily, I don't know how he did it, but I wrote a song with him called Us. And then things started picking up again. And I think, was it BBC introduced him? We're like, wow, this is a really good song. Then we picked it up, and then we just were like, you know what? Let's just go for it.
Yep.
So my journey of grief has always, unfortunately, found itself tied up in that moment of yeah. leaving major into independence, independent writing.
Do you think it felt like a loss to you, that you'd kind of yes. lost yourself, and also that you'd lost that whole year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually was grieving my old me as well. Yeah. Like, I didn't know, I couldn't even figure out who I was, let alone the other feelings that I had of grief. And then it's quite a male-dominated industry as well, so
yeah, that it is.
Yes, it is. And it's really sad to say,
yeah,
but then I found myself like surrounded by these people that I trusted that I no longer trusted.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I got really scared, actually. And I felt like that 10-year-old me again. And I was like, you know, you have these like father figures and male figures around you that actually you feel disenfranchised, because
yeah.
you're thinking, wait, hold on, who are you? And so yeah, I feel, I'm just gonna be real, like I felt for the first time as an artist, now I'm like fully myself,
yeah,
and I'm able to be like, I feel this way, I'm gonna put it in a song because I feel like it, not because I want to make millions of pounds. I want to do it because that's how I feel, and I want people to appreciate that because that's how they feel, not because I'm forcing that upon them,
mm.
you know? And I think when things have not been always easy for me in terms of my family life, from being bereaved so early. So for me, it's very, I have to be careful in the way that I write music so that I don't lose myself and that I don't become something that I don't want to be.
Yeah. That links back to what you were saying earlier, isn't it? Because it's like, although these X Factor situations where people talk about it and it's really justified if people want to talk about it, but also you're creating this dialogue where you're saying, this does not define me, even though it's with me all the time.
That's right.
And that's when I find it really interesting when people refer to grief as something like a shadow, always following you, can't get rid of it, but it's not actually part of you.
Oh my God, that's so cool. That does make sense. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually how grief feels, yeah.
Feel free to use it in a song, you know.
Girl, I got you. Thank you. No, I think that's so true. It is a shadow.
And obviously that's taken you quite a while to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
In a good way, I think actually taking time, especially if you're writing songs that are so poignant in emotion,
mm-hmm.
and you had that break,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to a point now where you're comfortable with your music, with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
What's the future of that music? What's that looking like?
Do you know what? I feel like I've never been more excited about it than I have been now.
That's awesome.
Thank you. I feel like I've been realistic.
Good.
That's what I've been. I feel like sometimes as artists, I think everyone can say this, like we're in all disciplines, you think that I'm going to do X, Y, and Z and then I'm going to get to this destination.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that, actually.
Journey, not the destination.
Exactly. And I finally understood that. And now I'm so grateful for the process. And I think the future's looking really good because we're just trying to just keep changing the boundaries. And like, as you said, like when I played the music earlier, it's like blending the genres and just not being just one thing.
Well, that is your music, isn't it? Because you've got this amazing soulful voice against this backdrop of kind of electronica, like I said, a bit kind of subtract-esque.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of a female version of Sampha.
Yay, thank... Oh my God. thank you. That's a dream. I love Sampha. I actually love him because he also, like myself, has gone through a lot of grief, like losing his mum. And I feel like it's charged in his music in a very subtle, beautiful and like euphoric way, I guess. And I feel like he's a really good example of how grief can embellish your art and actually make it something that's a bit, that's more meaningful, but in a like really genuine way.
Obviously you've used music as a way to deal with grief.
Yes.
Both internally and externally.
Yes.
With your performances, with your music you've put out.
Yes.
Through collaboration, so many things basically.
Mm-hmm.
But what advice would you give to someone who's going through grief? How would you say, you know, how you've dealt with it and how, I guess there's no prescriptive advice to that, but just how would you help someone going through a loss?
I would say be real to yourself, listen to whatever emotion you're feeling, but also understand that tomorrow is another day. There's always a chance to feel better. Also, appreciate that the person that has gone is still with you no matter what. It might not be in a physical way now, but I'm a bit of a spiritual person, but I do believe that, you know, they're still out there watching over you. And what would you do now to make them happy? How do you feel like they'd be happy to know you were living? And try and fulfill that every day. Small steps, they're not big, but just try and use that to propel you every day. And also find like a release that is healthy as well. Like if it's running, if it's, for me, it's art. So that art and music is the thing that's healthy for me to keep going.
I think you brought up something really important there because it's obviously this idea of kind of coping mechanisms through creativity.
Yeah.
But obviously there can be quite unhealthy coping mechanisms.
Yes.
And I've definitely fallen into that before. I'm sure we all have.
Join the club.
But the consistency that you have in your art, in your art form of music, that is a perpetual, it's kind of like a continuous coping mechanism, isn't it?
Always, yeah. I was talking to my partner this morning and I was like, we're never ever going to stop, are we?
And he was like, yeah, no, not really. And I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm going to be old and doing this, aren't I? And he's like, yeah, so am I. I hope so. Yeah. Even if it's not at the level I expect it to be, I want to make sure in my head that that's something I always do. It never stops, I think.
Yeah, creativity. And small steps is so important, because if you completely go straight into the big steps, you'll always feel like you're letting yourself down when you're actually not.
Exactly.
I feel like we're on the complete same wavelength with this.
Yes, me too. Of course. I'm glad that we are.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
That was episode 1 of When Someone Great Is Gone, featuring Nadia from the musical duo Nula. When Someone Great Is Gone is a podcast powered by Transmission Roundhouse, hosted and produced by Azili Poulton and co-produced by Bridie Addison Child. A special thanks to James Tyndale for additional editing on the podcast, and Maria Nikki from the Roundhouse for facilitating this project.